the Family Action Movement event. We will be there for that event on Saturday as well. So glad to participate. Jody is great, and her organization does fantastic work. So happy to participate. You know, obviously, we talk a lot about educational choice and opportunity, improving outcomes. So we'll be doing this under our banner of Opportunity for All Kids, or OAK. But yeah, I look forward to seeing you or the other folks from the K-Lite, and of course Jody as well.
Yeah, so much appreciate what all of you do. You know, I say it off and off the air. I don't know how often I say it on the air. Maybe I do. But it is we're humbled, and it's an honor to co-labor with all of you in the efforts that we put out towards our community. Now, I know, Paul, that you and I actually rescheduled our time because, you know, you were traveling around and and seeing, actually, it looks like some pretty cool stuff. I'm a little jealous. I can't say for sure I ever was at the Kennedy Space Center, and I know you had a chance to stop by there.
Yes, I did, and had a very nice vacation. My sister and her husband and their family, he's a now retired military Green Beret, specifically retired to Florida, and got a chance to visit them, but also got to visit an old friend, at least a holographic version of an old friend, Harrison Schmidt, former astronaut, and, well, I don't know, it's probably like the Marines. Once you're an astronaut, you're always an astronaut, right?
Yeah.
Former U.S. Senator from New Mexico as well, from the Silver City area, but I posted some pictures up on Errors of Enchantment, the mission seal, I guess, if you will, for Apollo 17, with Harrison Schmidt's name on there. A piece of moon rock that was brought back. Schmidt was, or is, a geologist. That one you definitely always of. Once you're a geologist, I'm sure you're always a geologist. So he got some moon rock that they put under glass there at the Kennedy Space Center. And yes, there is a hologram of Harrison Schmidt that you can go visit and ask questions about his experiences, why we went to the moon, et cetera.
Is that unique to Harrison Schmidt, the holographic Q&A?
I think there may have been one other, and it wasn't even an astronaut. It was somebody else. I think maybe a space shuttle, you know.
That's really cool.
Astronaut. Yeah. Very, very neat. So if your plans take, I've been to Florida numerous times, but this is my first time to that facility. We, of course, did plenty at the beach as a family and amusement parks as well.
I don't want you to leave off. This is one of the coolest things on the end of your report.
Oh.
You got to witness
a launch of SpaceX, launching some satellites for their Starlink. And yeah, that's the first time I've ever gotten to see a real live rocket launch of any kind.
Anticlimactic or surreal? What was that like?
So we weren't super duper close. We were staying in a town called Cocoa Beach, which is about 10 miles as the crow flies from Cape Canaveral. We got up at, essentially dawn. I was hoping to get a twofer and get, you can see from the video and the pictures, if you look at it, the dawn, because you're on the eastern coast there, you get to see the sun come right up over the water. Of course, there was a big cloud in the way, so we didn't quite see that, but it was a beautiful sunrise nonetheless. And then, I think it was 6:55 in the morning, they launched their rocket ship. And no, it was absolutely very cool. First time I've ever seen a rocket launch like that.
You happen to know what the mission was for this one?
Yeah, Starlink.
You mentioned it.
There was also some other stuff related to that, according to somebody I follow. But yeah, I mean, if you do go down there, that's the nice thing. You know, space shuttles used to launch every couple months if you're lucky. So the chances of that are really driven by your willingness to plan your vacation around whatever launch is happening and then hope for the best. They don't have delays and all that stuff. SpaceX is launching rockets, and not just SpaceX, but other companies are launching on a near daily basis.
Wow.
There. Yeah.
I have a friend who we went to church with, and he was, I want to say he was a veteran who was, working for the government here on, on base, and got recruited. He's in control at SpaceX.
Neat.
I don't know if I'd have the gumption if I headed that way to ask for the private tour or anything, but I sure would love to see a lot of what you got to see. For those not familiar, Paul, you and I both love the state.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been to the center near Alamogordo, just north of Alamogordo. There's a
Space Museum.
Yeah. For those who can't get out to Florida, make sure to check that out. It's just, I think, right just north of Alamogordo or on the north end of Alamogordo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been there. It's an excellent museum. And obviously, New Mexico has a deep history in terms of space, rocketry, people like Schmidt who have been to the moon and others. Definitely some connections there with New Mexico to the broader space program.
Hey, I did want to say this about Harrison Schmidt. Now, my kids are grown. They range from 27 to 40 years old. And when they were in homeschool right here on this campus of Calvary Church Albuquerque in the Hub, Harrison Schmidt came to speak to a homeschool group that we had here, was very amiable, and so much appreciated the time. He seems to have a real joy for sharing the knowledge he has with the kids. So nothing but good things to say about Harrison Schmidt, his service, and what he's continued to do since.
And I took my daughter to an event that he spoke at as well.
Yeah.
Just making sure she gets to meet some of the real important people that have changed our world. And Schmidt is definitely one of those folks. And yeah, a very, down to earth kind of John Q. Public kind of persona. He's not somebody who pats himself on the back or really tries to make himself a big deal, but it is a big deal, and it's a very cool deal.
Well, I'm glad you got to go do that, Paul. And thanks for sharing your experience with us. We'll kind of live our vacation through your experience for those of us who can't go. But the next thing I wanted to move on to, which by the way, Paul wrote a short feature at Errors of Enchantment on his trip to Florida, and the next story comes from errorsofenchantment.com as well. And I'll tell you, Paul, recently when I saw, I think it was on social media first, that the governor was talking about $250 rebate checks to New Mexicans, my immediate response was, you can keep your $250. How about, doing away with state income tax? And actually, when I read your piece in Errors of Enchantment, I was like, yes, Paul, both and. And not exactly. Only both and, but up to more. But there's reasons you give in it. And I think it was well written. I'll just, at this point, let you share. But I loved it because, I don't know why I didn't think that. Yeah, go ahead and send it, but do this too.
Well, thank you. And I'll further pat ourselves or the organization on the back by saying that, to my knowledge, the Rio Grande Foundation was the only organization publicly calling for rebates of any kind on this $850 million that the state is sitting on. And I am not going to claim any special intellectual relationship with the governor in terms of us influencing her somehow. But I was very pleased when the governor said that she wanted to do rebates. Now, I too was very disappointed. We were calling for $1,000 rebates. She says $250. I think a fair compromise at this point would be $500. That's at least more than one trip to the grocery store to do shopping for most people at this point in time. It would definitely help New Mexicans who have been impacted by inflation, which is still not completely slain, or higher gas prices, et cetera. And the state of New Mexico is sitting on, as we're going to discuss a little bit later on in this show, massive amounts of money. So they won't miss this, whatever, $850 million or however much they actually would return to us. Now, that's one aspect of this story, and there's a lot of different moving parts. I think the first thing I want to note is that we have not actually seen the governor propose or call a special session. Personally, I think she is probably struggling with folks like the Speaker of the House, Javier Martinez, who is very, very left of center, as well as Peter Wirth, both of whom probably have no interest in returning tax dollars to citizens of New Mexico. Now, the Republican Party did kind of pick up on this, specifically the House Republicans, and I will give Gail Armstrong and her team, as well as other, you know, Republican elected officials who have made the case for fully eliminating the personal income tax, but that won't come. I don't see a world and a planet where the governor calls a special session to eliminate the personal income tax kind of almost out of the blue. It would be great. It's something that we definitely have been talking about at the Rio Grande Foundation for a long time. We would love to see probably in the 60-day session, but not under this governor because she won't be there. So we're really relying on a future governor, Deb Haaland. I guarantee you she will not eliminate the personal income tax. Greg Hull has campaigned on it, and he has worked very diligently to promote and highlight that issue. Interestingly enough, George Munoz, Senate Finance Committee Chair, poo-pooed the rebate idea, but did latch on to the zero income tax idea and wrote a full-length opinion piece in the Albuquerque Journal touting that as an important issue. And I do think that both should be done. My concern is that nothing gets done. Why? Well, the governor gets pushback from leadership in the House. She doesn't want to have a special session where they come in and say goodbye within the same, you know, hour or two, as we saw a few years ago with the crime special session. And the governor, you know, I think she could be pushed to 500, but she's going to need the support of Democrats across the board, and that's going to be tough. I think Greg Hull made a mistake, the governor candidate, by not engaging more forcefully on this issue. I've relayed that message to Mr. Hull himself and his campaign. I said, you know, you don't want to just be labeled as another tax and spender like your opposition. You got to take different positions and have a different perspective and keep this issue going, because I think it's important that we get money back in the pockets of New Mexicans. So
that would seem like it would resonate so much. But you know what, Paul? So many New Mexicans, and I certainly appreciate those of our listeners who take the information we give them and become active in the public square. They're registered to vote. They actually go vote, and they're knowledgeable on the issues. I so much appreciate that. But you and I both know a large amount of, as you deal with this all the time, a large amount of New Mexicans are apathetic to these issues. They just, you know, it's time to make the donuts, get up, go do what they do, and what happens, happens. And I mean, for anyone, Deb Haaland or Greg Hull, to be prepared to fight to remove our personal income tax for the state, how would people not greatly respond to that when it comes to the ballot boxes? I actually don't know, but I also don't know why they show up in, you know, 22-23% of registered voters that showed up for the primaries. So who knows? You know, it is what it is. And I listen, I understand. I hear those that are, you know, some of you yelling at the radio, Steve, Jesus is, you know, God's on the, Jesus on the throne, man. We're good. We are, because he is. But we are called to be good stewards of what we've been given. And we've been given liberty and freedom in the place we live, to have an impact in that area. So that would be my encouragement to you to prayerfully consider. Paul, any more on that before we go to a break?
This is something that could be done right now to help people who have been stressed as a family by rising prices And I think it's a political winner. I think it's a policy winner. And I don't think doing rebates right now in July, as we sit here, would have any detrimental impact on the opportunity for real tax reform in 2027. I think we can do both and not particularly break a sweat or anything, given the financial status of the state of New Mexico. And, oh, by the way, the war has in Iran kind of bubbled up again here,
yeah.
As have prices at the gas pump, if you haven't noticed. So
are they higher than they were during the last administration, or are we still at a place where, it's about the same or less?
It fluctuates. Yeah. But this is unforeseen revenue in the coffers of the state of New Mexico. They thought it was going to kind of top out at $850 million in unforeseen. We're still piling in billions and billions of dollars annually for the budget and all the spending that goes on. This is 800. This is like you go into your couch cushions at home and you don't expect to find $20 or $50 bills, but this is the state of New Mexico finding $850 million that they didn't expect to be there. And what do we do with that? I think it's a very important question.
All right. Listen, if you just joined us, we're spending a full hour today with Paul Gessing. He's the president of Rio Grande Foundation. The website is riograndefoundation.org. And the content we're talking about, these articles that Paul's written, are coming from errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to take a quick break, come back with more with Paul after this on ABQ Connect. Thanks for taking the time to tune in daily from 1 to 2 o'clock, your late lunch on ABQ Connect. I'm Steve Ryman, and we're going to get back to our conversation with Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation. I do want to rewind a little bit to last Friday. We had people in studio from Hope Christian School in Albuquerque talking about the new amphitheater there and the free summer worship concert series that's happening Friday nights. Starts at 6 the let me see. Actually, the food trucks show up at 6. Concert looks like starts at 7 o'clock each week. And Tamara was in studio last week, who performed last week. If you went, you saw her and her crew. This week, tomorrow night, is Ben Lowry, who's got a great reputation as a local musician, worship leader, singer-songwriter, and all-around nice guy. Actually, very talented. He plays several instruments. That's, listen, the whole series you're encouraged to go out and check out. But July 17th, tomorrow night, it'll be Ben Lowry, and it's a free event, family-friendly. And it's outdoor in that new amphitheater at Hope Christian School. I mentioned the food trucks. And they're actually, I don't know if you knew this, Hope Christian School is celebrating 50 years, as is KLYT in September. We will be. And quick note, listen in September. We'll have some special programming when we get to that. Really talking about that celebration. But these concert series at Hope, they're open to the whole community, free, and you'll find details at hopechristianschool.org. Need more stuff like that, Paul, around the community, those free events. You got beautiful weather here, especially when you get to the evening. Once the sun starts to get low and down, that high desert sure cools things off.
No doubt about that. Yeah, it's nice to be able to get to those evening events and enjoy the outdoors that we have, and finally got some rain here.
Yeah, a little bit.
So that was nice as well.
Yeah, a couple days ago I looked at the forecast, and it's like every day, 50% chance. Okay, we're kind of maybe in that. Is it the monsoon? Where every afternoon, come between 3 and 6 o'clock, the clouds from the west back up against the Sandias and drop a little bit. That's kind of, it feels like that's where we are, and hopefully we will get some more. There's more in the forecast, I know, for tomorrow and the next couple of days. Maybe not so much today, but we'll see. It's Albuquerque. Just, if you don't like what it's like outside, just wait a few minutes.
Yeah, but you never abandon your outdoor plans on the threat of rain
right
around here either. So
yeah, for the most part, it's what, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then we're back to, things clearing out. So yeah. I would agree with that. I I feel for the people trying to plan an outdoor wedding this time of year, though. Listen, we're back to Errors of Enchantment. Paul has written all kinds of great information for you to consume, and we're walking through some of that. The next article, Paul, dates back to actually the 6th, and it's, you know, it's something we've brought up before about the permanent funds here in New Mexico. And, you know, I think, I don't know, when you and I first started talking, they may have been in the 50 millions or low, I don't know, but it just keeps growing. And you have a suggestion on how to address these permanent funds.
Well, just the sheer size of the situation, it's something that is worth highlighting. They recently announced, the State Investment Council, that is, which manages these funds, that we now are at $74.8, essentially $75 billion in the various permanent funds. Analysts with the State Investment Council say that by 2030, which once upon a time, 2030, heck, I remember the old Conan O'Brien, in the year 2000, you know, here we are creeping up on the year 2030.
Right.
But they say by then we'll have $100 billion with a B, and we'll be the second largest sovereign wealth fund in the United States. I believe Texas is the biggest. This would put us above Alaska. And it could happen much more quickly, given prices of oil, which we've seen, obviously, the volatility there. We could be even more in the, you know, generously funded as a state. And we've seen the amount of money in the permanent fund just since March go from $70 to $74.8 billion. That kind of track record would put us way above $100 billion.
I'm going to put you a hot button for Paul. How come the roads are still like they are?
Yeah. Because our state does not prioritize that. And unfortunately, our politicians don't really, I don't think they seem to care. Look, if you are, and we could go down a rabbit hole, but I'll try to keep it, you know, at the high level. One political party has controlled New Mexico for nearly 100 years, and they continue to get reelected and reelected and reelected, and they don't have a, you know, until the voters of New Mexico say, hey, you need to do things differently, they're going to continue to do the same things that keep getting them elected. It's all about incentives. And if you're a politician, the number one incentive for most, all of them, is getting reelected. And the people of this state, for whatever reason, seem to believe that the people that have gotten us to 50th and darn near everything are the same people who are going to get us out of 50th, which I don't see that happening anytime soon.
You bring up a good point, Paul. And, you know, the Rio Grande Foundation is not a political organization. And, you know, the things that you stand for have really nothing to do with a political party. What you have to do is with, you know, liberty, and you could, you know, articulate that better than I do. I don't think you really care which side of the aisle addresses these issues well. They just need to be addressed well.
Yeah, and I just mentioned Senator George Munoz, who's not just a Democrat. He is the, arguably, you could put the Speaker and the Majority Leader in the Senate above him. But in terms of financial expertise and decisions, he is numero uno, and he is calling for eliminating the personal income tax. So this is obviously not a partisan issue, and I recommend that people, when they look at who is running for any office, make sure to do some due diligence there. Make sure you do your research. Figure out, you know, our website for legislative candidates is a great website, the riograndefoundation.org. You can go onto the Freedom Index and see how people are voting on your individual liberties, and that includes certainly your pocketbook issues and whether we get money back into our pockets or whether the state of New Mexico socks it all away and sits on it and doesn't do anything about the roads, continues the same approach to the education system, which has plenty of money but hasn't been solved by more money, and just everything that we've done as a state.
Well, and before you move on, Paul, sure. You started to mention resources. You mentioned RioGrandeFoundation.org and the index. But go on with the, you know, we brought up Arrows of Enchantment. You have a couple of other places to get good information.
Yeah, well, RioGrandeFoundation.org is our flagship website. I mentioned the Freedom Index, which we track the votes of the legislature. Heirsofenchantment.com is where kind of I write blog posts and react to specific issues that are happening in our community, our state, and provide, you know, I guess you could call it our own free market, conservative commentary and analysis of the issues at hand that are affecting all of our daily lives. And Tipping Point New Mexico is our podcast. Just this week, it'll come out, is actually out today. Had a conversation with a woman from the, it used to be the Independent Women's Forum, The Voice, now it's the Independent Women's Network. And they have been running advertising across the state of New Mexico and engaging on the essentially the transgender issue in our schools. And so they've put a lot of time and money into this campaign and this effort. And especially when we're seeing national organizations who, unfortunately, it's almost always the case, national groups, especially center to center right, always have more money when they're based outside New Mexico, because there's just so much more money, so much more prosperity out there to fund these kinds of efforts. So when national organizations come calling in New Mexico and make the kind of investments that they're making, I think it's worth sitting down with them. So even though we don't handle a lot of those social issues, I thought it was important to have somebody with this organization comment and provide information. And basically, you know, they're talking about Supreme Court decisions regarding women versus men's athletics and other spaces for women. Common sense stuff that we, of course, you know, support separating the two genders and allowing women to have the opportunity to play the sports and whatnot. But yeah, just thought it was worthwhile news to have somebody on from that organization.
All right. Well, before we go to a break, Paul, any more on your article on New Mexico needs to constitutionally address its permanent funds?
Yeah, just to say that exactly how that works moving forward is an open question. But it is high time for our political leadership to realize that it is not only economically, for lack of a better word, stupid, and politically questionable to have the state sitting on the kind of money we're talking about when the roads aren't built, when the homeless rule the roads, and et cetera. It's a moral issue.
And Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, it's raining. This, you know, goes back to, we heard from legislators, people in government, you know, we really don't want to dip into this. It's for a rainy day.
Yeah. Well, I would say that this money is not just for a rainy day, because it would take one heck of a rainy day to go through $75 or even $100 billion.
But it's raining.
We're not getting the job done in New Mexico. Yeah. And we need to put some new ideas out, and this is one of the best ones.
All right. Listen, if you just joined us, Paul Gessing is our guest for the full hour from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org. And we've got more to talk about. We'll do it when we come back from the break on ABQ Connect. All right. Thanks for joining us. I always want to encourage you, if there's an event that you have coming up you want to let us know about, please do. The folks at Child Evangelism Fellowship did. We heard from them yesterday. You can go to cefofnewmexico.com to find out more about the pastor's luncheon they have coming up next week, Harvesting the Next Gen. They've got a free lunch for you. Pastors, and if you want all the details about that, happening Tuesday from 11:30 to 1 o'clock, it's happening right here in Albuquerque. Maybe make sure your pastor knows about it. Go find the details at cefofnewmexico.com. If you have an event, let us know by sending the details to studio@klyt.fm. You can also go on the website at klyt.fm, and under events, you'll find a place to submit your event and fill in the fields and and we'll get that email as well. So please do that. We'd love to hear from you, and from time to time, take some of those and put them on the air like we did with the Child Evangelism Fellowship yesterday. Look forward to hearing from you. We press on with our conversation with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. The website is riograndefoundation.org. And Paul, as we look at another posting you put at errorsofenchantment.com, cut me some slack here, okay? I want to try to pitch this to you. For those that are Princess Bride fans, you could say to the person using this term, I don't think abundance mentality means what you think it means.
That is a very well done reference. Kudos, Steve. Thank you for that. The Rio Grande Foundation, we very much believe that the people of our state and our country do a better job with their resources and shepherding their resources than politicians do. In New Mexico, I believe that the fundamental reason that we are so bad in so many of these national measures is because the government of New Mexico is so hostile to business and does not seem to believe that average people can make decisions for themselves. So what do? We get big government schemes that wind up helping keep us poor. Now, Mayor Tim Keller recently spoke at an Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce event saying that we should have an abundance mentality in New Mexico, in the city of Albuquerque. And kind of sadly, the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce wrote an opinion piece in the Albuquerque Journal echoing Keller's remarks. Now, I don't have a problem with the abundance mentality, but when you actually read the article and you figure out what they're implying the abundance mentality means, I have some real issues with it. So they talk about the tax increase and the North Domingo Baca Aquatic Center, which has skyrocketed in cost from $17 million to $70 million. A little birdie told me, specifically somebody from another elected entity here in the Albuquerque Metro, so a credible voice, said that the real cost is closer to $100 million at this point. Now, I'm all for nice things, swimming pools, etc., but this is outrageous, and it's way too much money. And the idea of raising a tax permanently to pay for a swimming pool, the gross receipts tax, $113 million taken out of our pocket and handed to government, is a terrible idea. So the other projects that they talk about in this article is the rail trail, which is vastly overpriced, $10 million a mile for a project that costs most places $500,000 a mile. A new stadium for the UNM Lobos. Now, I'm not against a stadium for the UNM Lobos, but this is a football team, of course. But they had one sellout one day last year, and suddenly there's already, like, we need a new stadium. Look.
The same thought occurred to me.
I am happy to have this discussion, but the point is, these are all three government spending projects. It's abundance for government, not for you and I and for the business community and not for taxpayers of the state of New Mexico. So, you know, if we're going to have an abundance mentality, that mentality can be a good one. We need to have that abundance mentality for the private sector, for taxpayers, for the citizens of New Mexico, not just government. And I would postulate, I would argue that New Mexico always has had a very abundant mentality when it comes to government. We spend money on a lot of stuff that you don't see governments in other states diving into at all. I mean, free buses being another one.
Or like you said, when they do, the bill isn't nearly as high.
Right.
Now, Paul, I'm trying to think. I see that, a mile, $500,000 here, where it's $10 million here.
Yeah.
there's a big what's going.
It's a huge difference.
Well,
yeah.
And what's going? And when does Doge come into those kind of things?
We don't have a Doge in New Mexico,
right? But is it? Am I on the? You know, I see that, and I'm suspect.
Right. Oh, I'm more than suspect. I think it's an absolute outrage. If I had to pin my kind of reasoning to one specific thing, if you've seen pictures of the rail trail, there's a lot of sculptures, there's a lot of so-called enhancements. Look, you've either got yourself a bike trail, and hopefully they can keep the homeless off of the bike trail so it's actually usable as a bike trail and walking trail, or you've got a sculpture garden and public art project. I don't think you need to do both, and I think the price at $10 million for something that costs $500,000 in most other places,
yeah.
I'm talking a mile of bike trail on a rail trail area.
Are you and other organizations, you know, some of which we have on this station, are you the accountability, or is there a process, like, should someone be following the money?
People should definitely be following the money, and we have talked to media outlets about the rail trail. Unfortunately, I'm happy to throw people under the bus if needed. It's not my approach, generally speaking, but these were folks from the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce. Not only did they not come out with us and speak against the tax increase for the swimming pool, which the gross receipts tax, I call it the original sin of New Mexico tax policy. It harms especially small businesses. And then to collect $113 million annually on infinitum for another couple of decades, when what you really need is between $36 and, I guess, you know, $70 million one-time expense, that's ridiculous. And, a lot of, if not all, of New Mexico's problems could be solved by free market policies that encourage investment in the state of New Mexico in the form of private dollars. We are not a state that is attractive for the investment of private money. By private, I mean businesses, business groups, etc. They do not come here because we are hostile to them and their dollars.
And honestly, if there was out-of-state big business that, you know, would be coming to New Mexico, if any chamber was going to be part of being active in that and encouraging it, it would be the chamber you mentioned.
It should be, yeah. So we need to focus on an abundance mentality vis-a-vis the private sector. And what happens in government, they will get their money. This is New Mexico, after all. We spend money in some pretty insane ways. I mean, you know, again, the Lobos football stadium. Look, we're still back today in the newspaper, in the media, talking about the location of a United Stadium. The Lobos play six-ish home games a year. I know Calvary does a good job. They used to fill up more people on Easter morning than you had during the football season. But, you know, that's a one-time event. The number of times that there are people in or and using that stadium.
Do they even do any of the high school championship games there? Or
not even sure.
Yeah.
But
The same thing came. I lived in Chicago, and the same thing came up when they were talking about putting money into Soldier Field.
Mm-hmm.
Was they do 8 home games, a high school championship, and there was reason to consider doing other things there,
sure.
Making a dome and connecting it to a convention center. And the same thing. Yeah. And what you said about attendance. I mean, I've been to, and listen, woof, woof, woof. A ticket should be a commodity. It should be like, they should be hard to get, mm-hmm. You know, and it's, they're not.
And again, using it for multiple purposes, we've just seen in the World Cup, the soccer at the highest possible level was played in football stadiums all across our great nation, many of them even domed. Now, obviously, we're not looking, please, no dome stadium for the Lobos. We want to just, if we're going to do this, it should be an outdoor stadium with grass. But there is absolutely no reason why you cannot have a soccer and football stadium together on the same plot of land, especially since that's where every other sporting event in this town happens, is on the same corner of Cesar Chavez and University.
Kind of want to make sure I say this as well. Not only woof, woof, woof. Love you, Coach Eck. Nice job last year. Okay, we're up against a break. We're going to take a quick break. We've got more things to talk about, and Paul Gessing is going to stay with us for the remainder of the hour. We'll get to it after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, Paul Gessing in with us for the full hour today from the Rio Grande Foundation, and I want to tease a couple stories we're going to get to in a little bit. So for those of you who've seen talk about data centers in New Mexico and campaign financing, if those are things of interest to you, don't go away because we're gonna get to that in a little bit. We were talking off the air, Paul and I, about the next story, the Rail Runner, and you know, I was a typical guy. Here, Paul, you know, listening to the woes, and instead of just listening and being compassionate, I want to solve the problem. So I start as you know, from what I know about the Rail Runner, started giving some, man, you know, here's some ideas. But I know that you've spent a lot more time looking into the issues with the Rail Runner that is turning 20 years old. And have a much better idea on the layers involved.
Yeah, this is a deep story in the sense that when I started at the Rio Grande Foundation in March of 2006, the Rail Runner had just been kind of passed into law, and there were, you know, obviously the Rail Runner's first voyage was 20 years ago, I want to say Tuesday or Wednesday. So now it has been in service for quite a while. But when I started at Rio Grande Foundation, it was a brand new, fresh face boondoggle. And we called it as such. We said this is not going to go well for the taxpayers and the citizens of the state of New Mexico. Now, I won't go through the entire history, but I will note that first and foremost, the tracks that the Rail Runner rides on existed from Belen to 528 in Rio Rancho. That area opened first. When we talk about the Rail Runner, that's where it started. What happened then is that the Richardson administration had insisted this project needs to go to Santa Fe all the way to, they have a train station there in Santa Fe. Some people have probably been there by the, I believe they call it the rail yards as well. That required the laying of 20 miles of additional brand new rail, what we see between I-25 and the medians. That was all brand new, and that's one of the reasons that the price of the Rail Runner was so stinking high, is because not many people are laying new railroad track these days in the 20th or 21st century. But anyway, that's the biggest expense. That was our first engagement on the issue. We also said this project should not be done. You should have buses running from, say, Coronado and Cottonwood Mall, just to pick two, to go to Santa Fe, because the primary selling point of the Rail Runner is getting people from by far the largest city in the state here in Albuquerque to Santa Fe. There's a lot of stops in between. This is one of the topics air we were discussing. And why is it so stinking slow? Because I too have taken a Rail Runner, mostly during the legislative sessions. Well, why is it so slow? Because you have a lot of what I would call extraneous stops that are politically motivated, where you don't get many people coming on and off. And I will let people's imaginations run with those. If they've been on the train, they probably know themselves. But let's just say that there are a lot of stops that are unnecessary and slow the train down. Everything has a cost to it.
Without going into great detail, you can tell me if I'm close. If you're going to put rails through here, you're going to put stops.
Uh-huh.
Was that...
Well, I mean, there's going to be some stops necessary. The question is, are all the stops that they have necessary? Yeah. And I would say a big no to that. Then, and I think probably the real kicker is that the train peaked in terms of its ridership annually, 2010 through 2012, at about 1.2 million people riding it annually. You want to know what the last ridership numbers were?
I do. I'm not even going to guess.
About half of that.
Yeah.
600,000. Now, COVID did a number on it.
Okay.
No longer. And I think here's what happened. I realize we have limited amount of time, but I think once people got a taste of working out of their home, government employees, they put up enough of a stink. You know, a lot of government agencies now are located in downtown Albuquerque, even though they're state agencies, because people from Albuquerque don't really want to go all the way up to Santa Fe, whether it's driving or the train or anything else. And that was their base. So COVID and the shift, I believe, in the way the state manages its office infrastructure caused a decline, a precipitous decline. But I think also it was a new thing at the time. People wrote it just to write it, and that was about it, because they don't have a utility for every single, writing it on a daily or weekly or monthly basis. Now, the cost, quote unquote, of the train was stated at $400 million, but it was amortized, meaning you build it, you buy it like your house, you don't cut a check for $400 million. So in real terms, the cost was originally about $1.2 billion, but many moons ago, there was low interest rates, and they refinanced it and probably took off a little bit of the cost. I'm going to say the project in reality cost about $1 billion for the infrastructure, the train sets, and all the things that are permanent structures of the railroad.
That's end of payments. That's
yeah.
Okay.
But it costs about $20 million to the taxpayers to operate on an annual basis. Uh-huh. And that's not going away unless the train stops running. And then the kicker, and I realize I feel like Johnny Cochran making my lawyer's case here. If you don't know who that was, look him up. The Legislative Finance Committee reported in 2024 that the train needed to increase ridership by 23%, no, nearly 25% growth, to break even in terms of CO2 emissions.
Ah.
In other words, the rail runner is worse for the environment than if we just let those people ride their vehicles or drive their vehicles up to Santa Fe instead. Now, again, at the time we said buses from the malls, et cetera, to get people to Santa Fe, that would save them time, and it would have saved the taxpayers of New Mexico a bunch of money. Of course, this project was in a different world, a world where the Permian Basin and the revenue of oil and gas hadn't positively exploded. So do I see a politician in New Mexico's future saying, you know, the rail runner's too stinking expensive, you're gonna pull up the tracks and we're done with this thing? No, for the simple fact that the state's awash in revenue. Again, the abundance mindset right here. The rail runner gets whatever they want, and there's very few questions asked about it, because there's so much money available. But can we cut taxes? Can we return that money to the taxpayers, even in the form of a rebate? That's a very open question. So 20 years of the rail runner, and you heard it here first. It's a boondoggle.
Okay. Well, here, I'll try to put a positive spin on it. It's not the rail between L.A. and Vegas.
That doesn't exist, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but how much money has gone towards that?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, let's move on. And actually, Paul, I'm just going to throw this to you, because there's two stories that I teased, one on the data centers and one on campaign financing. I'm just throw that to you with the 2 or 3 minutes that we have that you can walk through it.
Easy peasy. Data centers are a important way that they're necessary for the 21st century economy, because everything we do online requires data centers, not just AI, but Facebook had a data center down in Las Lunas for years, and these things are a requirement for this kind of corporate entity, anything that deals with the internet and online. So there has been a ban on data centers adopted by the governor of New York. There are four legislators from southern New Mexico, the Las Cruces area, who are talking about introducing a ban on data centers. I think this is a very problematic approach to new technology. We shouldn't be Luddites. We should be willing to accept the jobs and the economic growth, and also work. We've already got a solution for the power issue, which is the microgrids, which is separating those facilities away from our use of electricity and forcing them to essentially build their own, bring their own electricity. And the other one is the water issue. There is water available in the oil and gas industry. It comes out of the ground every time you drill for oil and gas. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of barrels or gallons, I should say, of water that could be treated and used, not just for data centers, but for other purposes in this drought-stricken state. So we should not be banning data centers. I use the analogy of this is like fracking, the fracking process of oil and gas extraction. A lot of radical environmental groups and opponents came out of the woodwork 10 years, 15 years ago, said, oh, this is horrible, this is horrible, we need to ban it. New York did, just like they just banned data centers. The panic over data centers in many ways mirrors the panic over fracking.
Okay, and I'll say this about the campaign financing. Paul put together an article. The title is Brillio County Will Soon Consider Public Campaign Financing. Go to Errors of Enchantment to read up on that. I do want to quickly...
August 11th, they're going to vote on it.
Okay, so it's important you go check it out. And then August 13th, the West Side Breakfast with the Rio Grande Foundation. You'll find out information about that on the Rio Grande Foundation website, riograndefoundation.org. Paul, let's do this next month.
We will, absolutely.
All right, and thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.